the left corner to Aguilla. Aguilla to the left circle. Passing to Yell. A shot. Save made by Aguilla. Rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts.
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers.
Okay, we are underway. Happy Wednesday. It's Wednesday, November 27th from our Groundworks downtown studio. This hour of Flames Talk is underway with Aaron Vickers of NHL.com. It's Pat Steinberg along with you. Welcome back to Flames Talk, Mr. Vickers.
I mean, it hasn't been that long that I deserve a formal welcome back, but I'll take it.
It's been about a week. Welcome you back. It's been a wonky schedule, so it's good to have you back.
Thanks, pal.
Flames Talk's available on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. Welcome to the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Treat yourself with up to $500 in savings of fire-resistant gun safes. Explore the full line of safes at CalgaryLockAndSafe.com. Flames will play in Detroit Wednesday night, but there's just not a ton right now that is super juicy to sink your teeth into with the Flames. They had a four-game win streak. It was snapped Monday against Ottawa. I think that they didn't have it that night. They were a little sloppy that night. They were fighting it that night. They took too many penalties. Reset, move on, better against the Red Wings Wednesday. But on this Wednesday, November 27th, we are now exactly 1 week away from the release of the Four Nations faceoff rosters, our first best-on-best hockey since 2014. It'll be 11 years almost between
criminal
best on best when we last had the NHL represented at the Olympics to where we are at the Four Nations, and then obviously getting set for the 2026 Olympics.
Did we have a World Cup in 2016?
I don't count that as best on best.
You don't like Team North America or Team North America, Team Europe?
Team Europe and Team North America is not best on best. That's not that there were some, it was best on best-ish, but this is
best on best adjacent.
It was very adjacent. This is limited best on best, and then we'll finally have it back for the Olympics in 2026. That's how I look at it.
Hey, you're entitled. You're entitled.
Last week, Wes, who I like better than you.
You are no longer entitled.
Wes and I talked about Mackenzie Weegar last week playing for Team Canada. Just your thoughts quickly on Weegar and where you are on that, and then we'll move on to three other Flames players that may or may not be in the mix for this. I think Weegar's
two and a half. Weegar, for me, makes the most sense as a number seven for Team Canada. He can play both left and right side. He can play all situations. Not that I think that he would be counted on to quarterback a power play for Canada, but he does have that ability. He can play different styles. He's got some finesse and skill. He's got some grit and sandpaper, and he's a known quantity to Hockey Canada, being the best player. Again, caveat, it's a world championship. It's not best on best. It's not significantly close to best on best, but was the best player at the 2023 World Championship for a gold medal winning Canada squad. For me, he makes sense because of all of those things, his versatility as a number seven. I don't know if he's necessarily an everyday player for that group, but as a number seven, he offers a lot of comfort.
And I'm on the same page on the Weegar front. I think if you're naming seven, there's a lot of versatility there with his ability to play the left and right side and some of the other stuff that goes into his game. Now, let's move on to the other players that could be in the mix. Two of them that I think are clearly in the mix, and one of them that's a bit of a dark horse, but I like the conversation. Rasmus Andersson and Team Sweden, is he a shoe-in for you on Sweden's roster? And again, it's tough to guess how the different associations are going to name their teams, but if Aaron Vickers was assembling a roster for the Trey Kroner, is Rasmus Andersson one of your 7D?
Yeah, he is, and part of it is just because he's been fantastic this season, and on merit alone he deserves. But part of it is also the fact that on right defense, Sweden isn't as deep as you'd think. They've got a lot of quality left shot defensemen. But once you get past Erik Karlsson, you're looking at names like Rasmus Andersson, Adam Larsson. And for me, Rasmus Andersson, for what he's able to do at both ends of the ice again, and for everything that we've talked about, Mackenzie Weegar, maybe Sands being able to play both sides, and you're not going to need Rasmus Andersson to play left side for Sweden in Four Nations because of the depth that they have there with Forsling and Hedman already named. then you're tossing in names like Dahlin and Ekholm and Jonas Brodin, for example, Hampus Lindholm, all left shot D, even if you want to go younger. Simone Edvinson from Detroit, left shot. Philip Broberg from Seattle, left shot. So in terms of, and I don't know how much Sweden's coaching staff is going to sort of lean or rely on lefty-righty pairing matchups, but the fact of the matter remains, Rasmus Andersson is one of the best right-shot Swedish defensemen in the NHL. And for me, what he brings, what he shows, the leadership, the entire package basically makes him a near lock to be representative of Sweden at this tournament.
Yeah, like you could make the argument right now that he is the second best right shot guy that right now hails from Sweden. I think you could make that argument because with Erik Karlsson and the decline of his game, I think you could, I think as an all-round defenseman, you could make a very, very salient argument that Rasmus Andersson is superior. Rasmus Dahlin would probably be the best of the group. But, I mean, you take a look at other right shot options. Like, I'm with you. For me, Andersson, of all the players that the Flames have that could be in the mix for these four nations, Rasmus is the only shoe-in for me. Because Uyghur's not.
Right.
Backlund's not.
Right.
It will blow my mind if Sweden leaves Andersson off just because he's so clear. And Karlsson is, I'm not saying Karlsson's going to be left off. He's already on. He was one of the
officially,
first guys named.
Yeah.
He's already officially on.
He was one of the six named.
I'm just saying that if you're going to go right now, Rasmus Andersson probably in terms of the impact that he makes on a game is ahead of Erik Karlsson where they are in their careers right now. And so if I were going depth chart, it would go Dahlin, then Andersson as your right shot D for Team Sweden right now. So that's why I say this one's pretty easy for me that he's on the roster and pretty easy for me that you're naming him. I don't know. I mean, you've also got Ekholm, Jonas Brodin, Hampus Lindholm, Philip Broberg, who would all be kind of in the mix or on the bubble. I don't even know if Andersson should be on the bubble right now.
No, and it's crazy to think he hasn't played for, well, it's crazy and it isn't crazy because, as you mentioned, no best on best in quite some time, but Andersson hasn't represented Sweden in an international sort of best on best type or even sort of any sense whatsoever since the U18 World Championship. That's, again, for U18 World Champ, under 18, that's been a moment, that, respectfully, Erasmus, it's been a moment since you've been 17 years old. I do believe there were some opportunities to play with Worlds and injuries and family stuff sort of have gotten in the way of that. But Sweden as a whole only has 7 right shot D in the NHL. There's no other right shot that has more than 3 points other than Andersson and Karlsson. You want to get into an Andersson-Karlsson debate, and points aren't the end-all be-all, but Andersson is outproducing Karlsson this season as well. So when you start looking into the fact of the lack of right shot D for Sweden, you look at Rasmus Andersson's ice time and overall impact on the game and his ability to penalty kill, to play power play, obviously the 5-on-5 strength that he brings, just the overall game Andersson has, it would kind of be one of the head scratchers of the roster announcement segment if Andersson is somehow left off of the Swedish team.
Yeah, I just, it's tough the way that Andersson's playing this year. Some of the players that are on the bubble. I think Jonas Brodin's a hell of a defenseman. I think Hampus Lindholm's a really good defenseman. And I think Hampus is going to be on the team too. Mattias Ekholm is a really good defenseman.
Ekholm, I could see going for the sheer shutdown ability that he has.
Oh, so. I think Ekholm's on. I don't think there's honestly any way you don't bring that guy for Sweden. But again, left shot.
Right. So I think what you're looking at is, again, you mentioned it, Forsling, Hedman, Karlsson, all named. They're set and forget. They're locked. Then you're looking at Dahlin, Ekholm, Andersson is sort of that next tier. And then it's up to debate, from my perspective anyways, if I'm GMing Team Sweden, who my number 7 is going to be, whether that's Brodin or Larsson, if you wanted another right shot in the mix, or again, if you wanted to go younger with an Edvinson, who's what, a 21-year-old former top 10 pick for the Detroit Red Wings, or again, Philip Broberg, who's emerged a little bit as well. But for me, the 6 sort of guys that are going to be in my lineup for game one, Rasmus Andersson's among them.
And again, Dahlin, as you texted me, Dahlin's a left shot too. Right. I don't know why I was thinking he was a right shot. There's just not a lot of right shot options that Sweden has right now.
Quite literally 7 available for Sweden. Because remember, this is an NHL-only tournament.
That's right.
So Sweden only has seven right-shot defensemen playing in the NHL.
Who are they? Do you have them in front of you?
If you want to talk for 10 seconds.
Could I just think, like, when you take a look at the players that are in the mix right now, there's so few guys that have right shots that also have Swedish passports. And while I don't think that's the be-all and end-all, when you're a guy like Rasmus Andersson, who is playing the way that he's playing right now,
right,
and also possesses what feels like a unicorn for that team as a right shot, like it just seems like there's no way you can't have that guy on their roster.
So your seven are Andersson, Carlson, Larsson, who we've talked about, Timothy Liljegren, Adam Boqvist, Nils Lundqvist, and Helge Grans, who's only played four games. So among right-shot Swedish defensemen in the NHL, Rasmus Andersson leads with goals. He has 5. Points, 13. Time on ice at 25:04. So he is your sort of pace setter, with no disrespect to Erik Karlsson, but is your pace setter for right-shot Swedish-born defensemen in the NHL. It would absolutely baffle me. Only Andersson and Karlsson have more than 3 points this season, and I understand the role Adam Larsson would play on this team potentially isn't to be a point producer, but the fact of the matter remains is Andersson, when it comes to just defensemen as a whole born in Sweden from that are playing in the NHL right now, he's got to be a near lock for this from my perspective.
Yeah, and I think of all the players that you named, take Karlsson out of it because he's already in, like, Andersson, I think, is...
No disrespect, Adam Larsson. And Rasmus Andersson,
I don't think Adam
you.
Larson's a good defenseman, but I think Rasmus Andersson, is ahead of him right now. Okay. What about Michael Backlund? This is far less of a shoe-in. This is far less of a sure thing. But where does Michael Backlund fit into this conversation? He has represented Sweden before. He has represented Sweden well before. He has captained Sweden at international competitions before. He's still playing at a very high level. Knowing that this is also an Olympic precursor event for these four nations and a great opportunity for the individual federations to, in high leverage situations, evaluate some players. It's why I think like an Owen Power is going to be in the mix, not necessarily because he's one of Canada's best seven right now, but because in a year's time, he might be one of Canada's best seven or a whole lot closer. So where do you see him and how did you like him at the Four Nations? That's why I'm really curious about Backlund, because as Sweden's fourth center, you know exactly what you're going to get. But do they leave him off because they want to try somebody else who's maybe a little younger there? I am fascinated to see what Sweden ends up deciding with Calgary's captain.
Well, that's why you're going to get into a debate if he's not on, and a player like Leo Carlson, for example, is a 19 or a 20-year-old who maybe isn't playing at the level of a Michael Backlund right now in terms of the full 200-foot game and the role you'd want to use him in as a fourth-line center or maybe as even a 13th or 14th forward. But you're bringing Michael Backlund on this team if you're Sweden to play down the middle. The problem is you've got Pettersson, Zibanejad, Elias Lindholm, Eriksson Ek, William Karlsson, and Leo Karlsson all primarily playing center. And again, you're not bringing Michael Backlund to be fourth line left wing or a fourth line right wing and playing him out of position. Now, I'm sure we'll see a scenario at some point where maybe one of those aforementioned names is moved to the wing, whether it's a Pettersson or an Elias Lindholm. We've seen Elias Lindholm play right wing here in Calgary, but it becomes fascinating for all the reasons you mentioned. He's still playing at a Backlund, that is still playing at a very high rate. He's 15th among Swedish born forwards in points per game in the NHL. You know, you're getting more than points out of Backlund as we've discussed, and his 200 foot game and Backlund sort of perennially is always a part of one of the best two-way lines in the NHL or shutdown lines in the NHL. He's bringing that leadership. You mentioned he captained Sweden, I think it was 2018, to a world championship. That team went undefeated. So you've got that leadership ability, that shutdown ability. But how does he sort of fit in? And I had to go overseas and message my pal Uffe Bodine about, okay, well, where does Michael Backlund fit in sort of this scenario? And to be perfectly honest, Backlund ended up being on the outside looking in as what Uffe described as the toughest cut he had to make in assembling his roster was having Michael Backlund not be a part of this team.
Well, you take a look at, and as you kind of throughout. I mean, their center depth is pretty impressive. Like, it rivals Canada in maybe doesn't have quite the high end with McDavid and McKinnon, but like, when you're talking about Elias Pettersson, who, I granted, has been struggling this year, and Zibanejad and Elias Lindholm, and I mean, William Nylander, if they want to use him down the middle. They've got some really intriguing options. Joel Eriksson Ek having a hell of a year, and I think is probably going to be on this team without question. Leo Carlson, William Carlson. They've got some really intriguing options. The question becomes, do you have a Backlund ahead of like a William Carlson? Do you have a Backlund ahead of a Joel Eriksson Ek? And how much does Sweden want to bring a young player like Leo Carlson on this mix? Because if they want to bring a young player like Carlson with them, that might be what keeps Backlund off the team. But if they're looking at a guy who's captain, who's a captain in the NHL, who's captained Sweden before, and they feel like there's a lot of value in that. Plus, again, Backlund is playing at as high a level as he has at any point in his career right now. It's not like you're bringing a bad player and he's just a good leader. I think there's lots of reasons to have him on. I think we all know where I'd stand and where you'd stand if we were making the decisions. I am so fascinated to see what Sweden decides to do and how much they look at Michael's game and some of the intangibles that he brings and his long association playing for his country, how much they factor that into their decision.
Here's what I'll say. If I'm general manager of Canada or I'm general manager of Sweden, I'm not using this tournament. It's just four nations, but I'm not using it as training wheels for the Olympics. That's to me, and this will kind of cut my legs out from underneath me for the next player we'll talk about. But this isn't the training ground for the Olympics. That's what the World Championships is for. And you can do a lot of evaluation there. You can get a lot of guys, a lot of experience there. So if I'm GM of Canada, or if I'm GM of Sweden, I'm taking the 13 best forwards I have because I want to win this event. I'll worry about the next event in 2 years' time when we've had another World Championship or two to evaluate. I want to win this. So I'm taking the 13 best forwards. And if Michael Backlund is one of those guys, I don't care what his birth certificate says. I don't care how old he is. If he's better than a guy who is 15 years younger than him on that day in February, I want the guy that's better. Now, I don't know how Sweden's managerial team feels about some of the debates, whether it's William Carlson better than Michael Backlund or is Leo Carlson for where you're going to use him better than Michael Backlund. But if I'm assembling the team, even if he doesn't play a minute and he's your 13th forward, Michael Backlund to me is valuable enough to have.
Answer that question.
William
Carlson and Michael Backlund have identical numbers right now. They both have 4 goals and 10 points. Now, granted, Carlson has 10 and 13. Backlund has 10 and 22. But they have identical numbers, 4 goals, 10 points. Although Carlson's offense is definitely at a higher level than I think than Backlund's is.
And that's fair.
I mean, Carlson scored 30 twice. He scored 40 once. Right. Backlund's never done that. But
if we're having that debate, it also depends on the roster construction.
William Carlson's also a hell of a two-way center.
Yeah. Like, it's not as though Carlson is devoid of playing a 200-foot game. He's well aware. If I'm building an absolute shutdown fourth line, though, to go against a McDavid line or go against a Crosby line, depending on how it shakes out, I'm having Michael Backlund, not necessarily ahead of William Carlson, but ahead of Leo Carlson for sure. Now, if I'm philosophically trying to build the four best lines and rolling one over the boards after another, after another, after another, then perhaps this is a situation where Michael Backlund isn't going to be in your top 12 and you want to bring a Leo Carlson in for the experience. But again, the Olympics is 2 years away. There's an opportunity to play two world championships between now and then. Young players, whether it's an Owen Power, whether it's a Leo Carlson, whether it's the next
Olympics
guy we'll talk about.
Only like 15 months away.
No, you're right. I was thinking it was two between. There isn't. So there's only one world championship between them. But my point remains, that's what the world championship would be for. It's for the young players and evaluating them in that scenario, not as a 13th forward or a guy that might not play, just to give them a sense of things.
Yeah. And I don't know, like I'm really torn on this one. I try to put myself in the shoes of a general manager of one of these four teams. and this is with no disrespect to what the Four Nations face-off is, but how much am I concerned about winning the Four Nations face-off compared to how much am I concerned about the bigger picture and winning at the Olympics in Milan? And so for me, I'm like, if I had to make a decision, and it's close between taking somebody that maybe is slightly behind another guy, but is more of a possibility come the Olympics. And I think it's most important to give a guy in high leverage minutes, high leverage, best on best minutes, a good evaluation at this brand new made for television event. I don't know. I still think I'm leaning towards that. Like if I'm between, I don't know, I'm trying to think of a good example, but if I'm between Leo Carlson and Michael Backlund, I can understand why Sweden might lean Carlson just for the experience and just to see what he does in a situation like that. Or if I'm between Owen Power and somebody else, and I'm like, okay, Owen Power or Noah Dobson, who's got a better chance of making our Olympic team, but maybe isn't the best guy right now, maybe I go Power over Dobson or something like that. This is one of the more interesting conversations I can remember, especially for an event that has no history, an event that to this point means nothing. It makes for some really, really interesting conversations.
For me, I want to win everything. And whether you agree with this next phrase or not, this is the first best on best we have in 9 years. And so I want to win it. I'm sure Sidney Crosby wants to win it just as bad, so on and so forth. Yeah, the Olympics is a higher profile event, but the fact we haven't had best on best for 9 years, I want the absolute best roster today, and I'll worry about the next event in a year's time.
Okay, so then make your case for Dustin Wolf.
Well, now, I didn't say I had a case. I said it would be interesting if, because remember when this was first announced, there is no country deeper in net than Team USA.
Of the four countries.
Of the four countries participating.
The only one internationally who's maybe deeper is Russia right now.
But they are not here.
Exactly.
So when this event was announced, you had Hellebuck, Ottinger, Demko, Swayman, and you only allowed to take three. So you've already got the debate there. Demko's been hurt all year, hasn't played a minute. And he could be back right away. He could light the world on fire. We don't know. Swayman, in that conversation, has been less than good this season for Boston. And so if I'm Pat Steinberg, doesn't that not open the door for a guy that might be there in a year or 2 years?
Who are your other two? Hellebuck is obvious.
Hellebuck is locked. Yeah. Ottinger is locked.
Okay.
Set and forget.
So it would then come down to Swayman, Demko, or a dark horse.
Like a Dustin Wolf or an Anthony Stolarz. But for this, if Dustin Wolf is your young guy of the future, he's your Leo Carlson in this example, is he not?
Yeah.
I mean, the numbers, and this isn't even just a gifting a spot. Wolf's 921 save percentage is fourth among American.
If all goes according to play, that three guy never plays.
Right.
But I mean, do I think it's going to happen? No. Because I think Jeremy Swayman specifically, as poor as his play has been this year, I think the pedigree and how he is thought of is significantly higher than what we're seeing from him right now.
Right.
I can see Vancouver saying, yeah, Thatch, you're not going. I actually don't think there's a way Demko goes, even if he's the number three. His situation injury-wise is so fragile. You want to get the most NHL time out of that guy because he's going to get injured again. He'll probably be on the shelf again this year. That's kind of the Thatcher-Demko story at this point. Olympics, different story. But do you see any way the Canucks are letting Demko go to the Four Nations?
Not when he hasn't played since the playoffs last year, and this mysterious-esque injury has kept him sidelined, and the Vancouver Canucks have done a good job of trying to stay afloat. But that seems like it would be just disastrous for Vancouver if he went and he aggravated something there and was out another 6 months.
Yeah.
But Dustin Wolf versus Jeremy Swayman, Wolf allows half a goal less per game behind arguably not as good a defense as Boston, although Boston's defensive game hasn't been great this year. In terms of save percentage, you're looking at 0.39 higher. Dustin Wolf's five-on-five save percentage is second highest among American-born goalies this year. 2.47 goals against is fifth. this is so much a move for the future, and you've got so much depth now. And even talking about move for the future, you still got Jake Ottinger in the conversation, who isn't old by any means, is probably your next full-on number one. Just a thought.
I still think they'll go Swayman.
Probably. But it'd be fun if they went another
way. It would be awesome if they went Wolf. I don't even think your argument's bad. I just think Swayman,
I think it's bad.
I just think Swayman has done enough to get himself there, but I would love it. I would love it if Dustin Wolf went. I just don't think it's going to happen. Patton Vickers from our Groundworks downtown studio, your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair.
Anything and everything Calgary Flames. It's all on Flames Talk. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
It's Flames Talk on a November 27th. Happy Wednesday. Aaron Vickers, Pat Steinberg along with you. Wherever you get your podcasts, Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, and more. And it's time for the Daily Flames Roundtable on this Wednesday, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills, just minutes from the airport. I like our two topics today. Sometimes I don't. Sometimes I'm like, these topics suck. Sometimes I'm not a big fan of the topics I came up with. Today, I like them. Guys, it's Vickers, Steinberg, now the voice of the Flames, Derek Wills. Guys, Yegor Sharangovich has scored in three consecutive games. I think since putting the line together with Backlund, Coleman, and Sharangovich, that's been their best line, and it probably has been their most consistent line, at least in my eyes, since those three have been put together. What do we think's working well between that trio right now?
I think it's a good combination as far as guys who can play 200-foot games, and Yegor Sharangovich is definitely playing his best hockey since late last season. I thought he was really dynamic in the back half of last season, and we didn't see that in the first, you know, handful of games this season. Now he had a built-in excuse. He missed the first seven games of the season with a lower body injury that he suffered in the preseason finale, but you know, he's found his scoring touch again. And I think playing on the left side of a line with Michael Backlund and with Matt Coronato on the other side of that line, it's really helped him. It's freed him up offensively. He's finding some time and space to shoot. And much like Andrei Kuzmenko, who's not using his shot, Yegor Sharangovich's shot is a weapon, and he is using it, and it's good to see him having some success. But I give a lot of credit to both his centerman and the winger on the other side. We all know how fantastic Michael Backlund is as a 200-foot player. You know, defensively, he is so responsible. Offensively, I actually think he's been creating a lot, guys. He's just not getting rewarded for it, at least not yet. And then Matt Coronato in what will probably be a long NHL career, he's really turned the corner. And it's not just what he's done with the puck, it's what he's done without the puck. And you know, asking him where his game has grown the most since he turned pro, and he said, it's how I've played without the puck. So you know, those two guys have been really good defensively. Sharangovich, even when he wasn't producing offensively, he was still good without the puck. But now he's added that offensive element, and the Flames certainly need that from him and some others right now.
Yeah, for me and Willsy, you touched on one of the more important pieces in terms of the chemistry between the three, I think, lies in the fact that all three can be two-way players. They can play that 200-foot game. So you're never worried about who's covering who, or if I try to go and do something out there that maybe keeps me deep in the offensive zone, you know you're going to have support. So there's that confidence that there's always somebody backing you up. And again, that could be Michael Backlund, that could be Matt Coronato, that can be Yegor Sharangovich. It doesn't matter which forward is in deep. You know you've got some support to try some things. And again, I think it comes a little bit to the predictability of all three players. Like, and I say this in a good way, because when you're line mates with somebody and you have no idea what they're going to do next, that can be a concerning fact. That can be a nervous sort of got to keep your head over your shoulder to make sure that you do have, again, it leads back to that coverage a little bit as well. But the fact that all three players, I think, are pretty predictable in the way they're going to go about things in the offensive zone. Sharangovich is going to shoot. Coronado is going to shoot. Backlund does have a high shot volume. If you look at sort of some of his metrics, he's not afraid to put the puck on net either. But there isn't that unpredictability of, oh man, I got to figure out what this guy's going to do, and he doesn't look like he knows what he's going to do, so how am I going to react when he does something that nobody knows what he's going to do? The fact that all three players, Coronato, Backlund, Sharangovich, play to me a sort of a straight line offensive game where the other two players have that sense of predictability of knowing what's coming next, to me, that's led to a bit of chemistry between the three.
Yeah, the a few things there that I think are really important. And I think, you know, just to kind of follow up on what you said there, Derek, about Michael Backlund creating and that type of stuff. I think that's a really important thing to underline, because Michael Backlund is playing at his level. I know he's 35 years old, but we're talking about a guy who looks like the same Michael Backlund that he always does. He's controlling the two-way game. He's been smart. He's been simple. He's been a play driver, and he's also been their most, if you go on high danger opportunities, their most dangerous player at 5-on-5. In terms of high danger chances over at Natural Stat Trick, Michael Backlund leads the way with 22 5-on-5 individual high danger chances. That leads Zeri, that leads Kadri, that leads Huberto, that leads some other players. So I just wanted to underline that I think it all starts with who the center is on the line, and Michael Backlund continues to be the type of center who drives a line. Then you've got Sharon Govich, who's finally starting to feel it. And, you know, one of the things you always talk about, Derek, is the defensive side of Sharon Govich's game, which especially when he's on the wing is a strength of his game. Well, you put that on a line with Backlund, that's going to be a good fit. And Coronado, the one thing that we maybe don't talk enough about when it comes to Coronado, on top of how he's turned the corner, on top of how he's shooting it a ton, on top of how he really looks like this is the league he belongs in without any doubt now, he also really, really works. And I think that if you are like the right side of the Backlund line for so long has been Coleman. And the one thing that you always talk about with Blake Coleman is how hard he works and he never cheats you on effort and so on and so forth. Guys, is that not exactly the same thing that you can say about Coronado? And they profile different ways as players in other parts of their game. But, you know, the way Coronado works is really impressive and really important. So you put all that stuff together, the level Backlund's at, Sharon Govich finding his game and his two-way ability and what Coronado can bring to the table, plus his work ethic, I think you get a really nice fit as a 5-on-5 trio.
You do, and they've been a tone-setting line for the Flames as well. And I was actually surprised, and you can ask Megan Mickelson. I was surprised in Ottawa on Monday night when they didn't start the Backlund line, because Ryan Huska has been leaning on that Michael Backlund line to start almost every game, and they do tend to have a good first shift, which can then lead to a good start for the team. So I wonder if they do circle back to that in Detroit tonight. But, you know, those three guys have to do a lot of heavy lifting. They are asked to quite often play against the other team's top players and to be responsible defensively. But if you play the right way and you've got some talent, chances are you're going to create something offensively as well. And we've certainly seen those three guys do that. And the one guy who I think looks a little out of place right now is Blake Coleman. And of course, Backlund and Coleman were such a dynamic duo for such a long time. And we'll have to wait and see if maybe the Flames circle back to putting those two guys back together. But for now, I really like that line with Backlund between Sharon Govich and Coronado. So I'm guessing Huska does as well. And we'll probably see that line together against the Red Wings tonight.
This will be a little slightly cherry picked, so grain of salt it somewhat. But in the four games that trio has been together, the three leading shot getters on the Calgary Flames: Sharon Govich at 20, Backlund at 18, Coronado at 14. Now, there's some power play time in there as well, so it's not like exclusively a 5-on-5 stat, but even when you do dip back to 5-on-5, 72.2 expected goals for percentage, 63.3% Corsi for. Like, that line has been arguably Calgary's best combination. It's a small sample size. Again, we're talking 37 minutes of even strength time, 5-on-5 time, but certainly the early results have been profitable for the Calgary Flames.
They've outchanced, they've outshot, they've outattempted. Shots are 36-11 when that trio has been on the ice, and shot attempts
that's
are
good,
57-33.
Right?
It tells you a pretty nice story about the way they're controlling play, and so that's a real positive thing. And, you know, I still think at some point this year, Coleman and Backlund will be back together, because I also think that I'm with you. I'm not sure if Coleman is properly slotted where he is right now, but that line's working, and you've got a trio that's setting the tone. Tough to split them apart. It's our Daily Flames Roundtable with Derek Wills, Aaron Vickers, Pat Steinberg on this Wednesday edition of Flames Talk. Thanks for hanging out with us on this Wednesday. One of the things we're talking a lot about on the show here on Wednesday, Willsy, is the Four Nations face-off, with rosters being announced 1 week from today. It's November 27th, a Wednesday. It's Wednesday, December 4th, when the Four Nations rosters are announced. Finland, Sweden, the United States, and, of course, Canada. And I think, you know, in this country, the country that is going to get the most run and the most interest is, of course, Canada. And I think there is a decent chance that we see one member of the Calgary Flames representing the red and white at this Four Nations face-off the first time they run the tournament. That player is Mackenzie Weegar. Guys, if you take a look at all the options Canada has when it comes to the seven defensemen that they will bring to this event, would Mackenzie Weegar be on your top seven?
Yeah, he'd be in my top seven, but I'm biased. So will he be in Canada's top seven, I guess, is the question. I don't know. I've taken a look at a lot of lists, and I wonder kind of what their thinking is. So most of the lists that I've seen, obviously Cale Makar is going to be there, but most of the lists that I've seen have Devon Taves there as well, and also have Alex Pietrangelo and Shea Theodore. So you could potentially have two pairings that play together in the NHL, and I wonder how important that is to the Team Canada brass. Do they plan to stick with those pairings at the Four Nations face-off? The other names that I've seen, former Flame Dougie Hamilton, he's off to a really strong start this year. It's good to see him healthy again. Josh Morrissey, a Calgary native, playing at a really high level for the Jets again. And then Evan Bouchard. So the other thing I wonder about, where do they have Bouchard slotted? Is he number seven? Because if he is, I would put Mackenzie Weegar ahead of him. Because for me, Bouchard's, and this is going to come off the wrong way, but he's more of a one-trick pony. You know, he's not good defensively. He's great offensively and really great on the power play. But if he's your number seven guy and you're only planning to use him if you've got an injury in your top six, I think having someone more versatile, someone who's more physical, someone who's better defensively but still has some upside offensively in Mackenzie Weegar would be a much better plan B for Team Canada. So if it were up to me, I'm just going to go ahead and assume that Bouchard is the number seven, although I've got no idea if that's actually the case, if that's where he is penciled in on their whiteboard. But and if he's the number seven guy, I would put Mackenzie Weegar ahead of him just because of his versatility. I talked about, you know, the different things he can do. He can also play both sides, so that would be important to me.
So who would he be, again, like in your, so he's on, so if the question is, would he be on your team, who would he be on over for you?
Evan Bouchard.
Okay.
For me, in evaluating this, I've got a set four, and I'm not going to rank them as the top four, but I'm putting Colorado's duo, Makar and Taves, on the team. I'm putting Vegas's combination of Pietrangelo and Theodore on the team. And then there's a mix of about six other defensemen vying for three spots. Dobson for the Islanders, Bouchard for the Oilers, Morrissey for the Jets, Dougie Hamilton for the Devils, as you mentioned, Montour in Seattle, and of course, Mackenzie Weegar. So I do see a scenario where two of those guys round out Canada's top six. And if I'm doing it, I would probably look at a combination of Dobson and Bouchard being in that mix, although I don't necessarily know if that's the blend that I'd want in my third pair. But for me, Mackenzie Weegar is on this team starting out as the number seven, because if I want a number seven, and we can argue slotting later on, but for me, a Bouchard wouldn't be a number seven type. For me, a number seven needs to be a guy that can play left or right, because in case of injury, you're going to need your seven to come in, but you don't know if it's going to be a left shot or a right shot that's going to be injured and out. You need a guy that can play all situations. Mackenzie Weegar checks that box as well. He can penalty kill, clearly can play 5-on-5. He can quarterback a power play. Not that you necessarily would need to in this Canada setup with the fact that you're probably looking at two power plays that are only going to have one D each, but offers you that versatility, can play different styles. And I'll argue Mackenzie Weegar can play a grit game. I don't think that that's any surprise to anybody. He can play a finesse game. He can play between the whistles. He can do that. And then the other thing that I think is going to be important for Hockey Canada, and it would be for me if I was building out my team on behalf of Hockey Canada, some familiarity. And we all know what Mackenzie Weegar was able to do, albeit at the world championship level, not at a Four Nations level, not an Olympic level, but at the 2023 World Championship, he was the best player in the tournament, not just Canada's best player. Really was far head and shoulders the best defenseman in that tournament. So when you're looking to check a box for a depth defenseman that may be in or out of the lineup or might have to do some spot duty, can play both sides, all situations, different styles, and is a known quantity, to me, Mackenzie Weegar makes sense as the perfect number seven for Canada.
So I've got five that would be shoe-ins on my team. Taves, Makar, Theodore, Pietrangelo, and Josh Morrissey.
Yeah.
I don't know why people are leaving Morrissey off. Josh Morrissey is a very good offensive player, but he also is a very good defenseman.
He doesn't get credit for that. Yeah.
I can't see.
And he plays with edge too.
And I can't see Canada keeping Morrissey off the team. I will be stunned if Morrissey's not. Plus, the Jets are the best team in the NHL.
Best defenseman on the best team in the NHL makes sense.
For me, that's another, like, for me, if I'm making the team, that's a no brainer. The question, and honestly, guys, and maybe I'm biased as well. Well, I definitely am biased. You only watch one team for 82 games. You're always going to be inherently biased. I think we can all be guilty of that at some point. But the fact and what Vic just said about Weegar being able to play the six, the 6-7, to play the left, right, and to be a guy that, you know, brings a little something that this group wouldn't have without him. I mean, the grit and the work ethic, I'm not saying other guys don't work hard, but it's just like the way that he plays with a little edge, he plays with grit, he can play offensively, we know he's strong defensively, we know he blocks shots, if he is the seven and he's not playing, you know he's not going to pout, like he just seems like the perfect guy to put on the team because of his versatility, because the versatility on the ice, the versatility on what side you can play him on, and the versatility of him if he does have to be the extra guy. There's not going to be a problem there if there are some injuries. And then it comes down to, like, McKenzie's one of my seven. He probably is the seven where he's slotted, and it all comes down to then who the six is. Is it Dobson? Is it Bouchard? Is it Owen Powers?
Not a great
other
start
guy
for Dobson, though.
No. And
I thought he had a great game here in Calgary, the home of Hockey Canada, though, here, what, last week?
Yeah, well, that would have been just over a week ago.
Not a bad place to have a good audition.
It comes down to one of those guys for the other six, and probably it's probably going to end up being Bouchard, but I wonder a little bit about Power as kind of a guy to bring along and, you know, think and look at and evaluate for the Olympics next year, and that is also a really important part of this. But I guess long story short, I'm not necessarily worried about who my seven are. The question is Weegar one of my seven? And yeah, I think that he is the perfect 6-7 guy to have on this team. It's tough to convince me otherwise because, Wilsey, to your point, I don't think Bouchard's a great profile for that 6 or 7. I think Dobson could be if that's the way they want to go, but I like Uyghur's all-round game slightly more. I just think that Weegar would be a perfect, versatile guy to bring that you can put in all kinds of situations. Penalty kill, 5-on-5. If he needs to sit, you're fine. It's a pretty easy choice for me, but we'll see what Team Canada ends up doing here.
Yeah, and I think the fact that he has represented his country well at the World Championships helps him. But the one thing I wonder if it hurts him is just his age. So you mentioned Owen Power. You know, Team Canada likes guys who are willing to participate in non-Olympic events, whether it be the Four Nations Face-Off or the World Championships, even going further back in their career, the World Juniors. So the fact that McKenzie's played in the World Championship and played well helps him, but his age might not help him in the sense that maybe they want to put a younger player on the team that is going to play in future world events. So we'll have to wait and see how it all plays out. But I really love the versatility of Mackenzie Weegar, the fact that he can play both sides, the fact that he's good defensively, but can also chip in offensively. And he talked about his attitude. He would be thrilled to be the number seven defenseman for Team Canada at the Four Nations Face-Off. So, you know, that wouldn't be an issue with him. And I'm pulling for him. We'll have to wait and see how things play out here. But he should definitely be on Team Canada's radar and in the mix for a spot.
And I think the other thing we'll need to take into consideration, not just in a Mackenzie Weegar potential bid to be on Team Canada, but, okay, how does this decor the seven defensemen that will be going to represent Canada at this event? What are their roles going to be? Where are they going to slot? I imagine we're going to see two power plays where it's four forwards, one defense. You know, Cale Makar is going to quarterback that top unit. And then Would you bring a Bouchard, who I think collectively will agree is primarily an offensive defenseman, just to quarterback the second power play unit, where 5-on-5, maybe you're not as excited about him being out there for 12 or 13 minutes a night in a third pairing capacity? So trying to figure out, okay, if you're not bringing Bouchard, do you look at a Morrissey quarterbacking that second unit, or a Theodore, so on and so forth? So lots of different sort of ins and outs in determining who the seven would be. I'm surprised to a degree that they're not, technically like 24 or 25 man rosters, where you're able to bring 14, 8, and 3.
Which they will be able to at the Olympics.
Which would make this conversation a whole lot easier, because imagining Mackenzie Weegar as a 7 or even an 8, and bringing in a young guy like Power, or bringing in a specialist like Bouchard, makes it a whole lot easier to sort of configure things. But with the 7 limit on defense, mm-hmm. it makes it a little bit trickier.
More NHL.
Yeah, and the other thing for me, guys,
yeah,
you've got so much high-end offensive talent that will be playing for the 4 teams. You have to be able to defend. If you're a defenseman, yeah, it would be nice if you chipped in offensively, but I think the first priority has to be your ability to defend. So that's, and again, Evan Bouchard is one of the best offensive defensemen in the NHL, one of the best power play quarterbacks in the league, but he's not great defensively, and that's why I would put Mackenzie Weegar ahead of him. But I think you can make a strong argument either way, mm-hmm. so looking forward to seeing how it all plays out.
All right, Willsy, have a wonderful rest of your Wednesday. We'll do this again on Thursday. It's nice to see that your link is working again, too.
Yeah, well, for today, and enjoy the game tonight, guys.
Derek Wills, Aaron Vickers, Pat Steinberg, Daily Flames Roundtable on this Wednesday edition of Flames Talk. And the Daily Flames Roundtable is brought to you, as always, by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills, just minutes from the airport.
Flames Talk is on the air and streaming on the Sportsnet mobile app. Sportsnet 960 The Fan, Calgary.
This hour of Flames Talk rolls on. Let's say hello to our Pacific Division insider now to close out the hour. It's Wednesday. It's time to check in with Jonathan Davis of NHL Network and VSiN Sports. Lots to get into when it comes to the Pacific Division with JD. We'll spin around the Pacific, get some betting trends, and a whole lot more. Hello, JD. How are you?
I'm doing great, Pat. How are you on this 15-game NHL day?
I am good. 15 games on Wednesday, 0 on Thursday for Thanksgiving south the border, as you can understand. And then back to action on Friday, including plenty of matinee action on Black Friday. Hey, before we dive in on the rest of the division, you had a question to ask about the Flames. You wanted to start it off with a question to me.
I do. So let's turn the tables here. You know, talking with some people, you know, who cover a lot of the Pacific Division teams, you're talking about Calgary. And one of the things that kind of stood out for me, I'm just curious what type of play it's getting in your market, is, you know, Flames, the record looks good. But the one thing that for me that would be a cause of concern is there's 5 games that they've won of the 12 that have gone past 60. So 5 mm-hmm. coin flip games. How much play, and, you know, do you see, is there talk about regression? I mean, I think it's what, 8 games that have gone past 60 in all. So what, 3 other losses, but 5 wins, you know, in games that you know, let's call coin flip skills competition, whatever you want to call it.
Yes, there has definitely been some talk about that. And some talk about maybe do they hit a wall at some point? They play in a lot of one-goal close games. They've had to go to extra time and shootouts even a lot of the time. They have not scored 3 or more goals in, I believe, 19 straight games. So there has been a lot of talk about kind of the razor's edge the Flames are playing on right now. And I think what always mitigates that for people in this market is, okay, if it does drop off, if all of a sudden that razor's edge and the tightrope walk starts to flip on the other side, and maybe some of these close wins end up becoming close losses into the second quarter of the season, as long as they're still working hard, as long as they're still playing their tails off, that type of stuff, I think a lot of people in this market will be happy if it does come back down to earth a little bit, and we'll see if it does. And the other thing that has helped them win a lot of these really tight games has been some outstanding goaltending, which if that continues, they're going to continue winning, I think, more of them than losing them.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I just wonder at what point, you know, does Dustin Wolf hit a wall? You know, how many games is it going to be? You know, he's definitely going to get taxed. But, what I mean, yeah, sure. It's been great, great what he's done. I was curious because I was getting some pushback. But you are – the one thing I definitely agree on is that this team does not get outworked. That's for sure.
Very rarely has that happened this year. I think you can maybe on two occasions – maybe three occasions you could say that's been the case. And one of those three might have been on Monday night against the Ottawa Senators. So,
Pat,
I know you're going with this.
So for the listeners who don't know, part of the work that I do with VSiN Sports Betting Network, so I'm always looking for trends. And with that Calgary loss on Monday to Ottawa, it's now teams that have come off a win against Minnesota are 1-6. Coincidentally, that one team that's won the game was the Winnipeg Jets, who are in LA tonight.
Yes, exactly. And we will get to that very shortly. But let's start in Los Angeles. We might as well, because they are coming off a very frustrating and rather embarrassing loss.
It was terrible. I mean, the coaching staff, I think, was at a loss for words. That, you know, I got the impression I did not attend the morning skate today, but in talking to some people who did, you know, kind of like threw their arms up in the air. I mean, there really wasn't no great answers. The one thing that we are expecting to see tonight is they put the lines in a blender, because that's really the only option they have, Pat. There's nobody that's going to be helping them down with the AHL Ontario rain. They don't have that, at least, you know, from an offensive standpoint. They just don't have that guy down there. So, you know, we saw in the San Jose game, they moved Warren Fogle up to play with Kopitar and Kempe. We're going to see, just a mixture of lines that includes Kevin Fiala playing with one of the new LA Kings, youngster Sammy Helenius, on a, I don't know, third line, whatever you want to call it. But, you know, they've got him. It's Sammy Helenius, not a household name, playing with Fiala and Alex Laferriere. And, like, this is, to me, like, if you're trying to put lines in a blender and you're trying to jumpstart your team, like, once again, Kevin Fiala is not playing with Anze Kopitar. Your highest paid forward is playing with a center who's got six games under his belt. Kind of tells you where this team is at. And I think at the end of the day, Pat, their record is what, 11-8-3. And, you know, that's good. You know, it's NHL plus 500, but that's in reality, it is 500. You're 11-11.
They do have the Jets tonight on this Wednesday. And there's the Jets played the Wild last, so that the trends would be favoring the Kings in this game.
It would, as we talked about. So the Jets played the Wild. They beat the Wild. And so, as I said, six of the seven teams to beat the Wild have lost their following game. The Jets are the one team that did follow up with a win. They beat the San Jose Sharks in their next game. Ironically, the Kings are one of those teams that lost to the Minnesota Wild and lost their next game. But the other trend going the other way is that teams coming off a loss to San Jose are 5-1 this year, LA being one of them. That's how good this season has gone, Pat. In the month of November, the LA Kings have lost twice to San Jose and once to the Chicago Blackhawks. The other thing that's interesting, again, I'll bring us back to a betting standpoint, is that this line is essentially a coin flip. It's minus 110 both ways. And that's, you know, you've got a Winnipeg team, which is what, 16-3, 16-4, playing an LA team that's 500, yet the sports books are looking at this as pretty much of an even game. And I almost wonder if the reason being, Pat, is that for Winnipeg tonight coming into LA, this is kind of like a sandwich game for them. They're coming off that win against Minnesota. They've got an inferior LA team tonight. And then after this, they're at T-Mobile Arena to play the Golden Knights. I do wonder if it's a look ahead, and maybe, and I'm not sure, I didn't look to see, I should go pull it up. Connor Hellebuck is listed as the likely starter, according to Frank Cervelli and Daily Faceoff. I do wonder if, you know, like it means likely. I don't know. Do we see Eric Comrie tonight? I wouldn't, you know, I do wonder. It's just odd to see that this, you know,
right.
The betting line is very funny. We call this, you know, it's fishy. And so there you go.
Let's move to the Vegas Golden Knights, who sit on top of this division right now, and they're rolling. And for the first time this year, JD, they're rolling on the road.
Yeah, I mean, it was three road wins in their first eight games, and now it's three road wins in their last four, and pretty convincing. I mean, you know, look, the loss, you know, they lose that game in Toronto, and then they bounce back the next night in a game that, you know, had a lot on the line, at least emotionally, for Ilya Samsonov, who had a war of words in the summer with Linus Ullmark, who was, you know, was questioning why the Leafs would have played Samsonov instead of Joseph Woll. And so it was a big game for Samsonov. And he was arguably their best player that night. And even in a game where he gave up four to the Flyers, in a game that, you know, Vegas rallied from 4-1 down, I think it was to win 5-4 in the shootout. You know, Samsonov was outstanding again. So it was a big thing for, you know, important for Vegas to get him rolling, because, you know, he definitely had some shaky outings early on, but he seems to have turned things around. You know, that Montreal game, Pat, on Saturday night, which was a 0-0 game after one, and Vegas erupted for five goals in the middle period. I mean, that was the fifth team to score five in a period. It's the third time that Vegas has scored five in a period in their franchise history. And the wild thing about that is, Pat, 15 different scores for those three games. That's kind of what this organization has been about, is their depth. And, you know, that was definitely on stage on Saturday night. By the way, going back just to the Kings for a second, not only did they give up seven to San Jose, which is absolutely inexcusable, but you have five goals to San Jose in one period alone.
Yeah.
Like that can't happen.
It's hard to wrap your head around when you think about it. Okay. We're chatting with Jonathan Davis, our Pacific Division insider, VSiN Sports and NHL Network. Seattle next up as they continue a little set with the Anaheim Ducks.
Yeah, and they're campaigning for 82 against the Ducks. It's a home and home this week, as Seattle is, you know, California dreaming, as I like to say. It was L.A. two, you know, they're in their second of two with Anaheim, and then it's two with the San Jose Sharks. But they've won now eight in a row over the Ducks, and really pretty much been in convincing fashion. I mean, six of them have been by at least two goals. All their wins have been in regulation, so they really have, you know, Their game a couple of nights ago, it got tight. I mean, Anaheim battled back. It was a 3-2 game, and the Ducks were pressing for, you know, for that third goal and came close. But at the end of the day, that's eight straight wins. And, you know, Jim Hiller in L.A. talks about it's a tough league to win in. And you know, tough league to win in when you're not a good team. But you got to beat the teams that are below you in the standings. And that's what Seattle, you know, did on Monday. They found a way to beat Anaheim, as I said now, for eight straight. And the other story out of this game was Shane Wright. It's been a struggle for Wright. I was talking to some people with the Kraken organization when they, you know, before they played the Kings a week ago, and they just said, you know, they're not sure like where this guy's at right now. Well, where he's at, like the Kraken, Shane Wright likes to play against the Ducks. It's now three goals in three games for Wright against Anaheim after he was a healthy scratch for, I think it was two games prior to the Ducks. So look, they, you know, for a Seattle team that ranks in the 20s in offense, they really need him, like others, like Matty Beniers, to get going. But, you know, this is a guy that, what, fourth overall pick. More has been expected, and it's just taking a little longer for him to get going.
Now, one area where Seattle has been strong is the other side of it, right? There's the offense, which has not been strong, but definitely defensively, they've gotten the job done.
Well, they have. And then I think, you know, it's Sportsnet's own Matt Marchese that I think was one that got everybody on the bandwagon for Joey Decord to be the goalie for Team Canada. I mean, he has been outstanding this year. There's no question that Decord, you know, he's taken over. He's continued where he left off from last year. Gives them a chance every night to win a game. I saw that firsthand here in LA, you know, last Saturday in a 2-1 loss. But there's no question. I mean, they've got a guy, you know, DeCourt is legit. He's you know, the Ottawa Senators cast off, the first ever goalie from Arizona State University. You know, he's for real.
Let's move to San Jose. We talked about their win over Los Angeles and able to explode for some offense against the Kings. And now that he's back, super rookie Macklin Celebrini is playing some pretty good hockey, isn't he?
He has. I mean, it's 10 points in 12 games. And, you know, I think that, you know, they had two goals against the Kings a couple of nights ago in that 7-2 game. I mean, I watched this guy play, and he should have had another goal against Buffalo if not for some acrobatics by James Reimer. I don't know if you ever saw that highlight, but Reimer somehow, you know, was a contortionist and reached behind himself to snare a puck that was going in the net. Right now, sure, it's Celebrini, it's Dustin Wolf, and it's Matvei Michkov. All vying for Rookie of the Year, and all of them can make a legitimate argument for. But you know, and I don't know, Pat. That game against it was Buffalo on Saturday night. Pat, he had a shift of 4 minutes and 19 seconds as the Sharks had back-to-back power plays coming off the tail end of a shift, a 5-on-5 shift that he had.
That's a long
beer league hockey at its best.
Yeah, that, I was
that's
say.
Ovechkin. Like that's Ovechkin-esque, you know.
That's a beer league shift. That's when you're down.
Yeah.
That's when you're down to only like 7 skaters or 8 skaters in beer league. Yeah, he'll take a 4-minute shift.
Yeah, that's the problem. Was there were like 19 other guys on that team though that night. So,
yes. Not a beer league game.
Yeah. No. But hey, look, it wasn't because he wasn't getting off the ice. They weren't letting him.
Yeah. Exactly. Let's finish in Edmonton. They've had some time off, coming off a really impressive win against the New York Rangers. Let's wrap it up with the Edmonton Oilers and what you're seeing. What's jumped out at you about them here?
Well, I mean, it was an impressive win. It was a dominating win, you know, over the Rangers on Saturday night. But you know, I don't know what to make of it yet because it's the Rangers and they're having their own issues right now. What I'm intrigued though. For Edmonton is that they're going to go, they've got back-to-back games this week in Utah where they've had, you know, they had 5 days off between games. So they've had time to adjust to the elevation, but then they got to go the next night right into Colorado. So it's interesting. It's the first time that any team has had back-to-back games at such high elevation. It's interesting to see how they respond. I don't think it should be a problem for the first night because they've had all this time to get ready. Be interesting to see how they handle things the second night. And it's, you know, look, the Oilers are, you know, they've had 1 3-game win streak. They've had a couple of twos, but pretty much it's been win one, lose one for the most part over these last 8 games. So, you know, I think to make any bold statement about, oh yeah, I really like where they're at. You know, I think we still need to see a lot more, but they should be getting healthier. I think Zach Hyman should be returning for that game. Don't know about Victor Arvidsson, if he'll be back for either the Utah or the Colorado game.
Good stuff as always, JD. Appreciate the time. We will spin around the Pacific Division again next week. Thanks for doing this as always, hey?
All right, bud. Be well. Take care. Have a good night.
You too, and we'll see how some of those betting trends play out as this 15-game night in the NHL goes on as well. Jonathan Davis, our Pacific Division insider on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline, using the same secret recipe since 1975 at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast. Enjoying the game at home? Call for pickup or delivery at 403-248-3344. As we start to wrap things up this hour on Flames Talk, Aaron Vickers with us on Twitter at AA Vickers. Our producers, Cam Hughes and Shan Vergie. My name is Pat Steinberg, and this hour has been The Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Treat yourself with up to $500 in savings of fire-resistant gun safes. Explore the full line of safes at CalgaryLockAndSafe.com.